You're listening to the Inside the Mix podcast with your host, Mark Matthews.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Mix podcast. I'm Mark Matthews, your host, musician, producer, and mix and mastering engineer. You've come to the right place if you want to know more about your favorite synth music artists, music engineering and production, songwriting, and the music industry. I've been writing, producing, mixing, and mastering music for over 15 years, and I want to share what I've learned with you. Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Inside the Mix podcast. If you are a new listener, please do hit that follow button. And if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you hit subscribe and that notification bell. And to all returning listeners, a big welcome back. So this is another Inside the Mix podcast interview episode, and I'm joined by mix engineer Brent Hendrick from Nashville, who has over 20 years of experience in the Nashville music industry. It's a very, very interesting episode, specifically for those who want to get more involved with the organization and routine of being a mix engineer, a professional mix engineer. So in this episode, we look at the story behind Brent's journey as a mix engineer, what struggles he may have come across along the way, and also successes as well over the last 20 years. Then we look at setting the stage, what has been crucial to the organization and ensuring success and smooth flow of mixing. Then we look at tools of the trade. So in the ever-evolving world of music production, there are countless tools, folks, and software designed to aid organization. And we look at tools or practices that can streamline and keep a session tidy. We look at the balancing act as well. So that's not necessarily working non-stop and how we can strike a balance between taking breaks to refresh our ears. We look at collaboration and communication and discuss another layer of organization and management. And then we have a quick look ahead at what we predict is going to be the next big thing in organization and mixing in general in the music industry. And we chat about AI. And then we finish by debunking some myths and misconceptions around organization and productivity in the music industry. So folks, you're going to love this episode. There's loads to take away that you can then impart into your own workflows and then crack on as a mix engineer and producer. So let's dive into this episode. Hello, folks. And in this episode, I'm very excited to welcome our guest today, Brent Hendrick. Brent is an award-winning mix engineer with over 20 years of experience in the Nashville music industry with a passion for creating captivating and impactful mixes and a talent for aligning each mix with the artistic vision of collaborators. Brent has established himself as a go-to professional across all genres, most notably pop. Brent, thanks for joining me today, and how are you?
I am very well. I'm still on Los Angeles time. I just got back yesterday, so I'm still adapting. Oh, wow. But I'm feeling pretty good considering it's 7 in the morning in Los Angeles. So,
Wow. So what time is it where you are at the moment? Because you're in Nashville,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's 9 a.m. right now. Here. Yeah.
9 a.m. Okay. Well, I always say to people, I appreciate when I talk to individuals across the Atlantic.
Yeah.
And specifically down in Australia and New Zealand as well. And I'm talking to someone later in Singapore, and it's going to be 3 a.m.
Wow.
For them. So, wow. Yeah, I know. I know. I do appreciate everyone works to my schedule. Rather than
I'm a morning person.
Rather than anything
it's
else.
It's all good.
Oh, yeah, same, man. Same. I'm most productive in the morning.
Same.
Definitely. That's quite kind of a nice segue, actually, because this episode is going to be focusing on productivity, organization, etc. Mm-hmm. So I think it'd be quite cool just to kick off with then this question. So this is kind of like the behind the glass question. So your bio cites, as I mentioned, that you're a mix engineer with over 20 years of experience as a working professional in Nashville, in the Nashville music industry. What is your memory of your journey? Can you share maybe a memory of your journey with our audience and maybe a struggle or some struggles that you've encountered along the way?
Sure, yeah. It has been a long journey and parts of it I've I think blocked out and forgotten about. But I can kind of do like a real quick origin story just for anyone who hasn't heard that before. I was passionate about making records in high school. You know, when I was 15 or 16, that's kind of when the bug really bit me. I was in a band. We went into a studio. It was early days of Pro Tools. And I just was like, this is super cool. You can record these ideas on a computer and then burn them on a CD and play them the next day for your friends at school. And I was just enamored by that. And so shortly thereafter, I saved up and bought, you know, a computer, which at the time wasn't that much. It was very expensive, but you weren't getting much processing power back then. And just a simple interface and this program called Cakewalk Pro Audio 9 and set up a little studio in my bedroom in the late 90s. So it was kind of the early days of home studios. And would record all the bands in high school. And just the more I did it, the more I fell in love with it, the more hungry I became, and the more I wanted to learn about making records. And so, you know, I was just, I grew up in East Tennessee, which is just like 5 hours from Nashville. And there was an audio school here in Nashville called SAE that had just opened, just a 9-month audio school. So it just made sense for me to kind of, right out of high school, 18, move here to Nashville and start going to school there. And it was nice because it was just 9 months. It was just learning like signal flow and the basics, the things that kind of you need to know and nothing more. And then after that, graduated there when I was 19, started doing internships here in Nashville with a few different people. One was with a composer doing television or music for television, for network television. And then the other was producing primarily like rock records in the Christian and gospel music space. And so, yeah, did that for a few years. And then I think it was around 23 is when I decided to go, you know, become a freelance producer, engineer, mixer, and been doing that for the past, 20 years professionally, I guess, here in Nashville. And just a few years ago, kind of transitioned even to become more of a specialist, which is, mixing only. I kind of started, kind of giving up all the production work and deciding that mixing is what I enjoy the most, what I'm best at. That's all I want to be doing now. And, so I've been kind of transitioning into, hey, I'm a mixer in the pop space, and that's what I do now. So that's kind of the quickest version I can give you of the past 20 some years. And so, yeah, there were ups and downs. I'm trying to think of some memories, you know, I mean, some of the struggles along the way. I think this is just pretty common for a lot of people. We're just trying to figure out where the work's going to come from. You know, it's time to pay rent. How am I going to do that? You know, work's kind of slow right now. And so you've just got to start kind of getting that hustle mentality and knocking on doors, trying to figure out where work's going to come from. And so it was a lot of, you know, chasing after, you know, bands and artists, trying to build relationships and get work there, or, you know, connecting with, you know, writers or publishers or just basically anyone that was, you know, recording music that, you know, do you need an editor? Do you need, you know, I was just wearing like a lot of hats and kind of a jack of all trades back then and saying yes to anything that would pay just so, you know, can make ends meet. So I know that was a big struggle for me just being, you know, in my early 20s, kind of here on my own in Nashville. And I think that's something a lot of people deal with, and it's never easy, but it is one of those things I tell people, you know, you just got to stick with it. And it's something that's going to get easier over time, and that work will start to compound. And the few clients that you hustle to get, you know, you take really great care of them, and then hopefully they'll stick around. And when they need something else, then they'll come back to you again. And then that just starts to kind of grow over time, and that makes it a little bit easier. So, you know, that's one of the challenges. I think another one that comes to mind is just knowing that a mix or something a track that you've just recorded, like, isn't right, but not knowing why it's not right. You know, that was something that I remember sitting, this would have been just, you know, maybe when I was about 20 years old, sitting in the car, listening to like mixed version, I think it was like 27 of this song that I was working on, you know, and this was like before even sending it to the artist or anything, you know, and just being obsessed with it being perfect. And, you know, I think when you're early on in your career, it's sometimes hard to know, you know, like your gut tells you it's not right, but you're not for sure what it is, you know? And so that was really frustrating for me, is just knowing that that it wasn't as good as it could be, but not knowing how to get there, you know? And it was a lot of just like trying things, hoping that like one of those things would make it work. And so that's something that just over time as well starts to, I think, get a little bit better. And with experience and also just improving monitoring and room acoustics and all of those things, you know, it gets a little bit easier as well. So I guess what I'm saying is, you just gotta, if you really want this, you gotta play the long game, and you gotta, you know, it's that initial journey, the beginning of that journey is never really going to be easy, unless for some reason you're in a band and you wrote some song and it blew up and all of a sudden you're just, you know, the hot new thing. But that's usually not the case for most people. And so I think the people that really like stick around with it are the ones that have what I say, you can't have a plan B in this industry. You just have to want it so bad that you're just going to find a way to make it work.
We'll be right back.
So I've got a hunch about a common struggle we all face: mastering.
If you're an independent artist or music producer, you've probably encountered the frustration of masters that just don't hit the mark, right? They lack balance and refuse to play nicely across different devices and environments. Ever found yourself wondering, why don't my masters sound like my references? Perhaps you've spent countless hours attempting to master your tracks only to be unsatisfied with the results. Maybe you've tried every silver bullet plugin or even dabbled in AI. Or perhaps you're already working with an engineer but you're eager to explore different possibilities. Well, here's the solution you've been searching for, Synth Music Mastering. I'm offering a game-changing opportunity with a one-time free test master for a limited time. Picture elevating your music with my unwavering commitment to quality and a personalized touch that you just don't get with the big mastering studios. The best part, it won't cost you a penny. Just submit your finished mix and let's see how we can transform your music together. Don't let mastering be a mystery any longer. Say goodbye to the frustration and step into a world of sonic excellence. Grab your free test master now. Click the link in the episode description or head over to synthmusicmastering.com.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. Really, really cool stuff. So you mentioned there, like, you started with the high school, and I've chatted to a number of professional mix engineers, audio engineers, and producers, and I've also listened to other podcasts as well. And that sort of story of you were really interested in it, and then you started recording your friends' bands, etc. And I love that you mentioned Cakewalk as well, because I remember using Cakewalk years ago, and I had this old Hewlett Packard laptop, and I was getting this sort of quarter inch. It was such a bodge job, plugging my guitar. I didn't even have an audio interface. I was recording my guitar straight into my laptop. Yeah. So I remember doing that, And then moving to Nashville, and you did the academia route as well. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you meant about internships. And the freelancing side of things then. So you decided to go freelancing. When did you know that you wanted to go? What was the catalyst for you going all in as a freelance sort of mix engineer?
Well, the second internship that I was doing, actually it kind of turned into more of an assistant position. There was some pay there. He decided that he was going to move to California, play in a band with some members of, I think it was that band POD, if anyone remembers POD. A couple of those members went off and did their own band. And so he was like, joined that band as like the guitar player. And so it's like, okay, well, I can either, start to work underneath a third person now, or it's time to make that move. And after a few years of doing the intern and the assisting thing, I just felt like I knew enough to be dangerous. And it was just that time, I've always been a bit of like a control freak and knowing what I want. And I think it just made sense. It's like, I want to work on like my own projects. I want to make those like final calls as to, what kind of instrumentation we're going to put on this song or how it's going to be mixed. And so I was just ready to kind of like be the boss, and it was a little bit scary, obviously making that move, knowing that, okay, I got to get health insurance and, like I said, pay for my apartment and have food and all those kinds of things. But it just, at some point you just kind of have to make that move, and it's, it can be painful for a few months, and then it starts to get a little bit better. I mean, it was even painful for me a couple of years ago to say that I'm no longer a producer, because I'd been producing for so long and enjoyed that as well. But, when you know where you want to go, you kind of need to just make that move. And sometimes it's nice too, to have some people in your court that can kind of cheer you on. I know that when I made the transition to mixing full time, that was very helpful, was just having people, and I think your clients just kind of let you know too. It's like when they keep hiring you to mix their records, okay, maybe that's what I am, And so, it's never easy to make that first step, but I think you really got to. Time is short, and you got to, if you want to get there, you just got to start sooner than later.
Yeah, totally agree with that. You kind of want to, when you got to go all in, and you never know. I think I had this conversation probably about this time last year with an artist, and it was sort of surrounding the fact that like you don't want to just, you never know when that break could be. It could just be around the corner. Yep. And I know what you said earlier about how like you got to play the long game, because it's not going to all happen straight away. And you never know. A lot of people do sort of give up, for want of a better way of putting it, just when they're at that point whereby they could turn that corner and potentially just it could all, as you mentioned there, about compounding and you're treating your clients well and they're coming back, etc. Really interesting stuff. And I love that you mentioned POD as well. That song, Alive by POD.
Yeah.
Man, I binged that song back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, see, I mean, Chris so Lord Alge, really. Yeah, I remember loving that mix when it first came out.
Yeah, absolute banger of a song. Yeah, yeah, I remember that. I'm probably going to go listen to it now after this episode. I'm going to go on a nostalgia trip. Yeah. Excellent, man. So, yeah, having worked on a range of projects then throughout your career, how crucial has organization been in ensuring the success and smooth flow of your mixes? Can you recall a particular project, maybe, where your organization skills proved to be, I hate to use the term, but a game changer?
Yeah, I mean, when that question kind of makes me start thinking about, like, on the mix side of things, at least. I mean, if you're talking like tracking sessions and things, I think having like multiples of things nearby and all those kinds of things are helpful. But on the mixing side of things, you know, the backup process is the thing that comes to mind for me that's really crucial and can, you know, I mean, then like if for some reason you're working on a song and you're mixing it and you have hard drive failure, I have a lot less of that than I did, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Drives seem to be a lot better. But, you know, if you don't have that mix that you've spent whatever 10 hours working on backed up, then, you know, it's going to be pretty embarrassing for you to let the client know that, you know, you've got to start all over again, especially if you're on a time crunch and those kind of things. So I think in the mixing world, backing up is one of those things that you, it's a simple thing to do, but that can really, you know, save the day. Just having multiple versions, you know, I do a lot of save as. So for some reason, I'm on mix 8 and they say, you know, actually I like mix 2, but I want the vocal a little bit louder. Knowing that I have a save as from mix 2, I can just open up that, bring the vocal up, re-export, and it's done. As opposed to like if I just kept saving the same file over and over, I couldn't instantly recall the project file at mix 2. So I think just, you know, file management's a big thing for me. It's just always knowing where everything's at, labeling things properly, having, you know, real-time backups going on at the end of every day. Those probably are the biggest things that I do in my world that are very easy that anyone can do. And I can maybe talk about just my backup process really quick because it's very simple, very cheap, and it helps me sleep at night. The two things that I love are there's an app called ChronoSync Express. I think it's like $30 or $40 in the app store. That just allows me to plug in a hard drive and just it looks for anything that's new files that have been created on my audio drive, and it just pulls them over and puts them on that drive. So that's kind of like my on-site backup. And I try to do that. Maybe it's not every day. Maybe it's a few times a week. It doesn't take but a second. You just have to actually make sure to do that. And then I'm a big fan of Backblaze, which is a great application that runs in the background, and at 10 p.m. every night, it just looks for any new files on all of my drives on my audio computer and it uploads that to the cloud. So that's what I would call my offsite backup. And that's the one that really helps me sleep at night, knowing that at the end of every day, all my files are somewhere else. So if my house were to burn down or a tornado hit or something like that, then I could still, you know, they're going to mail me a drive the very next day. And in a few days, I'll have my audio drive back and can be working again if I need to. So I think between those two applications for on-site and off-site, that makes a huge difference. I change out drives every year or so just to keep them fresh as well. But I think having a good backup plan is going to, you know, that ensures that your client never knows, you know, if you do have an issue, you don't even have to say anything because you got it ready to go and can jump right where you left off again. So that's the first thing that comes to mind for me.
Yeah. And I think it's incredibly important because I think I've had my fingers burnt with regards to backups, and it wasn't necessarily from the client's perspective. It was my own, really, because this was using Reaper, and it doesn't automatically create backups for you. This is not actually backing up to the cloud, etc., but just in the actual DAW itself and creating backups of what you're doing, and then it suddenly dies. So I think creating backups, like you say, offsite in the cloud is incredibly important, as is actually in the DAW itself. So this is an interesting question, actually, and this is a bit of a tangent, but So you've got the backups. How long are you storing a client's project for? Do you have like a set length?
Forever.
Once it's complete.
Forever. I store all their mix versions, all their masters, and all their stems on the cloud. And I can go back from 15 years ago if someone randomly hits me up like, hey, I'm still doing music. They want like an instrumental to use on some TV show. It's like I can look like a hero because just in a matter of minutes, I'm sending them a download link for that. And so I really recommend like printing all those versions, all those stems, anything you can possibly think of. For me, it's like once they've signed off on the mix, I print the main mix, the TV, the instrumental, and the acapella, those four. And then I do stems now as well because I have a very streamlined way to do that because they're always going to come back at some point saying, oh, for our live show, we need the stems, you know. So it's just nice to do it, do everything when you have that drive connected, those plugins are currently working on that OS. It's just best to always print as many versions as you possibly can as early on, put those on a cloud somewhere, and then just keep them there forever. Because you never know. It's so much easier. I used to make the mistake of someone hitting me up and saying, hey, that thing we did 4 years ago, can I get the stems for that? Well, I wasn't printing stems back then, you know? So I've got to, you know, get the drive, maybe get some type of adapter to even get the drive to work on this, you know, new computer. And then it's like a version of, you know, Cubase from four versions ago. And, you know, and then it's just, there's so many nightmares and takes so much time. It's just so much easier to just do it right when you finish the song and once they've signed off on the final mix. So just over the years, learned the hard way. And that's why I love these podcasts is I can share all my mistakes and encourage people to do things the right way so they don't have to feel the pain that I've felt. And so, yeah, that's, I don't know if that answers your question. I've kind of gone off on a tangent myself probably, but.
Yeah, it does. And it makes total sense. And I think I've done that with my own personal sort of projects because I there's one song that I'm releasing because I released my music as well as mix other people's stuff. And I'm releasing it. But I started it about 2 years ago and I should have finished it then, but I let it drag on and on. And I did exactly what you've had there, which you've mentioned, which is slightly different sort of scenario, but it was I opened Logic with the DAW I was using at the time and some of the plugins that I no longer have because I no longer use them. So I should have finished it at the time. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And it's just easier, isn't it? If you just do it all at once and just get it done.
It is, yeah.
And what you mentioned there about from the client's perspective is important, I think, as well, in that you're able to just do it quickly.
Yeah.
It's sort of like it can be done so quick rather than, like you mentioned, you're having to dig around in old files, etc., which yeah. is only going to help that sort of referral process and your name, etc., which I think is incredibly important for the yeah. audience listening if they want to get into mixing other people's
customer
work.
Service is a big part of my world. I want things to be, you know, quick. I want to be responsive. It just, you know, it's just the pro thing to do. I mean, you want to stand out. You want someone who's worked with five other mixers in the past to then work with you and be like, wow, this is an experience unlike all the others. This is now my mixer because there was zero friction along the way. Everything was just always, you know, just ready to go. I mean, for example, I was in LA all last week and someone was like, hey, I need the stems for this. And I was thinking, oh man, I haven't gotten to that yet. But then I was like, no, actually I did. They're already online. And I was able to send that link out while I was traveling. You know, I didn't even have to remote into my computer to try and do it while I was out of town. And so, yeah, as soon as you can print those versions, really just do it, upload them to a service too that you're going to keep forever. I use this application or this cloud storage company called MediaFire, which if I were to like jump on something today, I probably wouldn't use that, but I got on it like forever ago, at least 15 years ago. And it's just where everything's at. And I've just stuck with it because it's all there and it would be a pain to, you know, whatever, take 700 gigs worth of clients' content and move it somewhere else. But it actually works out. It's a pretty good application because you can just do like a download link and allows them to stream WAV files in the browser and all that. So it's not so bad and it's a good price. I like it better than Dropbox. But yeah, just, you know, when you start storing stuff somewhere, just think of it as like your eternal cloud storage drive that you're just going to keep everything on, because I can't imagine having to switch to some other service. So once you do decide on a service, make sure you get it right too, I think.
Key bit of information now, I think. It's kind of like doing your due diligence, isn't it,
yeah.
in terms of your research
yeah.
and making sure you're picking one because you know you're going to be using it for a while. And as you mentioned, it is changing to something else is tricky. I'm going through this process now. It's once again, it's slightly tenuous, but I use MailChimp for the podcast and I email in the podcast mailing list. And I want to move to another platform now, but I'm so entrenched in MailChimp and I've got these automations set up. It's going to be so hard for me to move. So the audience listening, definitely do your due diligence. And I think that's fantastic, fantastic advice. So you mentioned a few sort of sentences ago about streamlining the process. So, and you've mentioned some tools so far. So you mentioned just then about Mediafire, you've mentioned the Kronos and also Backblaze as well. In the ever-changing world, this is where I was going, of music production, there are countless tools, you've mentioned a few already, and software designed to aid our organization. So what tools or practices do you personally swear by to keep your sessions tidy and streamlined?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is it's not a lot of like third-party applications that you have to buy. It's a lot of it's just stuff that's built into your DAW or built into your operating system. I think we can start with file structure. I mean, for me, I have just a standalone audio drive, and that's all that that drive is used for. And when you open that drive, it's all the folders are the bands or the artists, basically the client's name. And then in that folder, you have a different folder for each song. And then I have a folder that's called mixes and a folder that's called masters. And then in those two folders are the songs, folders in those folders, you know, in the mixes and the masters are stored in those folders. And it's just, I always for years have just done it that same way. So I always know exactly what to expect. So I think just getting like some type of creating some type of formula, some type of process and just sticking with it, I think is just kind of speeds, you know, the day-to-day kind of stuff up. So I just think starting there and just keeping things properly labeled. And of course, we've already talked about backup and doing lots of save as once you're in your DAW, whatever that is. And so then, yeah, with there, you have all the mixed versions, you have all the masters, you have all the project files, all the different save as versions of that. And it's just all nice and tidy and clean right there. And then that's kind of the stuff that can be uploaded to the cloud. You know, all of that goes to Backblaze, just some of that goes to Mediafire, which is the mixes and the masters. So that's kind of like on the OS side of things, you know, in the DAW mix template. I know people talk about mix templates all the time, but it is one of the biggest things in my world that makes me more efficient, because I'm in version 20 something of my mix template, and it's been refined and refined over many years. And I just know where everything's at. I know where the rough mix is going to be. I know where the reference mix is going to be. I know where everything's getting routed. I know that it's going to be vocals, then BGVs, then keys, then acoustic, then elect. I just know the colors and the folders, and it's all just, every song is essentially the same. So it's not like I'm looking like, where's that acoustic guitar? I know it's going to be like under the keys and above the electrics, always in like this color of a folder, you know? So I think just doing that is something that anyone can do. It doesn't cost any money, and it can save you hours a week. And that's a lot of time for me. And it's also then, you know, if you eventually get to a place where you have an assistant or someone come along, you can kind of have this formula that they can follow as well. And just, I think structure is a good thing. And so that's huge for me, having my mix template. And then kind of going along with that, I mentioned previously that I'm a Cubase user. I've been in Cubase, started Nuendo and then switched to Cubase, and been in the Steinberg world for my entire career, basically. And just learning key commands is huge. Customizing your own key commands is a big thing in my world. I've had a lot of the same key commands for a long, long time. And then creating macros with some of those key commands is huge for me, especially when it comes to exporting stem mixes. And then taking all those key commands and then putting them onto my 32 button Stream Deck is really nice too. Like the stuff that I don't use quite as much. So I'm not having to remember like, what is that crazy key command to make it do that one thing? I can just press the button and it does it. So, that's been, a biggie for me as well. I'm trying to think, yeah, just making sure that your tracks are labeled properly is a big thing. You know, if things are a little weird when I get them from the client, I want to take the time to actually give it a better name than just sometimes, you know, chorus electric guitar. I may actually like go, oh, that's an Ebo or something, and write Ebo guitar. So I actually know, like, when I'm like, where's that Ebo guitar? It's like not the chorus guitar. It's like the Ebo guitar or something. So just getting more specific with track names can be helpful as well. There's a few things that come to mind.
some great stuff. I think folder structure is massive, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm very much like that as well. I regularly review my folder structure as well. I don't go in and change everything, but it's I totally with you there in terms of just making organization just makes your life so much easier. Yeah. And what you mentioned about the mix template as well, because at the beginning of the year, I did a podcast episode on the process of creating a basic mix template mm-hmm. in Logic and why it's so important. Because as you mentioned, that it can save you so much time. Yeah. And also I find with songwriting as well, and I did another podcast episode on this, and having a template for if you're an artist who's writing music. So you can just dive straight in, you've got all your instruments there, and you can just start writing. Yep. And then it just does save so much time. And the Stream Deck, I need to look at. I've seen so many people mention Stream Deck, and I need to look at that myself.
Yeah, it's
been procrastinating.
Yeah, you can get a used one at a pretty good price. I bought a used one for, I think, $150 US. And it's another, I'm always just looking for things to just make this just streamline things a little bit more. You know, for me, it's all about efficiency. And, you know, when the work piles up and you got to move through stuff, you just, you know, having consistency. And it's almost like coming up with a plan and just sticking with it. And you just start to kind of, it becomes like you're, you know, flying an airplane or something, because everything's always here and these buttons are always here. And it's almost like you turned your like studio into something more than just some DAW that works. It becomes all like encompassing. I don't know if that makes any sense, but just knowing, you know, everything, the button, everything's in its own right little place. That's just me. I'm like kind of OCD in a way, I guess, which comes in handy when it comes time to mix. But just finding a process that works for you, and then just sticking with it. And then I think it'll just, you'll never be going, oh, how do I make that happen? Or where's that file at? You always know where everything's going to be. And just makes for a smooth process.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And I'm with you 100% there. I'm always like that. I'm always refining my workflow, because as you mentioned there, you want to make it as streamlined as possible. Just make it easy, which kind of moves on nicely to the next question. So we've mentioned about being productive, about streamlining our workflow. But that doesn't necessarily mean sort of working nonstop. So this is particularly, I think this is a really good question for the audience as well. And you mentioned earlier about iteration 27th of a mix. And I've had many conversations with people about how many mixes they go through in the iterations. How do you strike a balance between taking breaks to refresh your ears and ensuring that you remain productive and meet a deadline?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot better with this. As I've gotten older and wiser, I think breaks are essential for me. I take a lot of breaks, and I think that if you take some breaks, you can actually get through a mix quicker than if you don't. The reason that I like breaks isn't even as much about resting my ears as it is about like resetting my perspective. That's why I take breaks, because you can just step away from a mix for just 20 or 30 minutes and come back to it, and so many things will be revealed to you that were not when you were, you know, way in the weeds of a 2-hour, you know, kind of session that you were doing, you know, earlier on that mix. So, I mean, you can be way in the weeds, you can step away 20 minutes, go and whatever, go for a run or go for a walk or, you know, whatever that, you know, whatever, listen to a podcast for a second. I know a very good one that you could listen to. this one right here. Now, that's going to be your reset. And then you're going to come back and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, the bass was 3 dB too loud, or that vocal is way too wet on the verses, or, you know, those kind of big picture things that move the needle a lot. Those are the things that are going to stick out. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, work an hour, work 2 hours, take a break, work a few hours, take a break, work a few hours, take a break. And working from a home studio does help with that. I can start first thing in the morning when everything's super fresh, and then maybe go on a run. And then while I'm cooling down for my run, like work for a little while longer, and then, you know, take a shower and get ready for the day, and then work on it, you know, and come back. And so you're almost looking for like opportunities to create these breaks. And you're still, whatever, going to be mixing this song for 8 or 10 hours or whatever it takes to get that really great mix one. But it's just, you're kind of breaking it up a little. Maybe it's even over 2 days if you have that luxury. And I just think that every time you have that new, fresh reset, fresh perspective, that it's going to kind of get you where you need to go quicker, you know, because when you're in the weeds, you're not thinking, you're not noticing some of the big things. And it's just, you're like oh, let me turn that up 0.2 dB here. Oh, let me like fine tune this automation right here. And it's like, well, that's all important. But like I said, taking those breaks allows you to like realize that something is way off tonally, or, you know, something's way too loud or way too quiet. And so that's why I encourage everyone just to take breaks. It's also, like you said, good for the ears too, just to kind of rest those as well. And I, you know, when I was in my 20s, I worked, my hours were a lot different. I worked way more hours and just, you know, night, morning, and, you know, weekends, all that. But now that I have a wife and a couple kids and all that, it does a good job of also like kind of creating some like hard stops, you know, at the end of each day. So I'm pretty much now just working more of like the 8:30 in the morning till 5 p.m. And then if I need to occasionally in the evening or on the weekend, if things really start to pile up. But, you know, most of my projects, there's not like these hard deadlines, and I usually stay on top of things to where nothing gets too backed up. And so it kind of works. I really like having that balance. I mean, hanging out with my family is another like just great way to kind of recharge me and those kind of things like do something for me as well, that kind of when I come back, I think having just that limited time and knowing this is like your day and this is all you've got, you almost make more of it than if you just have this wide open schedule. I think it's a lot easier to go off and do things and get distracted. And I kind of enjoy having a set structure now. It works well for me.
I agree with that. It's echoes something that I heard. I don't know if I heard this on a podcast recently. I may have seen it on something on TV, but it was all to do about organization. So you mentioned there about like, if you have a block of time, so you mentioned that 8:30 till 5, mm-hmm. or even if you have an hour, if you block out, if you know you have an hour to do something, you're probably going to be more productive rather than if it's just open-ended. Yeah. So if you know you've got 5 hours to finish a mix and that's it, and you've got 5 hours to work with. Whereas if you don't have that sort of deadline, as it were, for want of a better way of putting it, you can just go on and on. So I like the idea of having those hard stops, as you say. That's probably a better way of putting it, rather than a deadline, like a hard stop. Yeah. And knowing when to take a break, as I think it's quite easy to get into the, or fall into the trap of just working constantly and mixing into the evening. I mean, some people are productive into the early hours. I personally wouldn't do it, but some people are. Yeah. So I think having those hard stops is really important.
Yeah.
So it kind of, in a way, it moves on a bit onto the next question, which is kind of like looking ahead as the industry changes and mm-hmm. the demands of artists and mix engineers grow. How do you envision the future of organization and productivity in music production? Are there any sort of tools or trends that you've seen that you are excited about, or something that you're thinking about trying in the industry?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is probably like the use of AI as kind of a personal assistant. Mm. I don't think we're far off from having, you know, AI be able to integrate with our DAWs to where I can just, you know, get to a point where it, you know, it's like the files are in this folder, go, and it sees those files, it pulls them into your template, it does all the routing, you know, could clean up things, could tune things, could vocal align things. I think that's all like not too far off. Basically using AI to do all the non-creative tasks. That's what I'm really excited about. And then to where I can just, while I'm sleeping, you know, it's prepped my mix. I wake up, it's all ready to go. I mix, and then it does, you know, prints all the versions, prints all the stems, all of that on the kind of all the front end stuff and all the back end stuff that's not fun as a mixer. That's what I really am looking forward to. I don't like the idea of AI starting to also, you know, mix records kind of like it is in the world of mastering. That's a little scarier, but I think mixing is a lot safer still for a while than mastering is. So that's kind of the first thing that comes to mind is offloading some of that stuff that I don't want to be doing. And then that allows me to spend more time doing other things outside of the studio as well. Or I like the idea of just a mix getting prepped while I'm asleep. That sounds really nice, and not paying like anything for, or a small fee, whatever this application costs. But I think that's something that's going to be, you know, here fairly soon.
Yes, I'm excited to see that. So if a client uploads their files and then it's uploaded, as you say, overnight, and then you, in the morning, you open up your door and it's already color-coded, labeled, grouped. Yeah. topped and tailed, etc. That would be very nice. But as you say, I think that's where it's kind of those repetitive tasks, mm-hmm. isn't it? The ones that you would get someone to do, an assistant engineer or someone to do it for you. But I think, yeah, I think it needs to stop there rather than going to the actual the mixing side of things, as you mentioned. Yeah. Even vocal aligning would be quite nice, though, because I find that an absolute pain. I think that would be good if you could have something come in and do that.
Oh, yeah, I think it'll be pretty 100%. Pretty doable.
Yeah, it's probably being done right now. What I've noticed is doing the podcast over the last year, I've managed to claw back so much time from these repetitive tasks purely down to AI, which is incredible, because I think there was that sort of, as soon as ChatGPT and brought generative AI to the forefront of society, for want of a better way of putting it, you had all these companies clamoring to have AI bolted onto their application and their service. Mm-hmm. And it's only Riverside, for example, the platform I'm using right now, in the last year, they'll love me for saying this if they even listen. In the last year, the amount of AI sort of based adaptations they've made to this platform is incredible. It does so much for me now compared to when I started the podcast. So I'm totally with you there. And I had a feeling that's where the question would go. And it'd be interesting to see where we are in 5 years.
I think it's going to be a lot different, I think. It's moving so fast.
100%, definitely. What are your thoughts on, I know this is a way off on a tangent now. So have you heard any music that's been created by AI? Sort of someone saying, write or perform this song in the style of someone. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it too much. I have, I think, maybe heard a little bit of that. You're talking about like where you kind of like sing a vocal and then it all of a sudden turns it to like Drake or something along those lines?
Yeah. It's kind of like a deepfake,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is, I guess. I don't really have any strong feelings about it. I mean, I think it's bound to happen. You know, as far as the legal side of it, you know, it I don't know how
it's not root.
How someone, you know, like Drake or Taylor Swift would feel, you know, knowing that some hot new single with their voice is not actually their voice. I don't know. It's going to be a little messy for a while, but I don't know too much about that world. I just know that it's happening, and it's something that I'm sure we're going to be dealing with more and more. I haven't actually mixed any AI tracks, as far as I know, right now, but I have explored some with the new, this is somewhat related, but the new Waves online mastering, that's all through AI, similar to Lander, but I think it goes a little deeper, and I've had some decent results with that. For $6 a master, I think if there's time, especially if people maybe do stuff for like Sync World or like music library, kind of where you need a lot of stuff mastered, but you can't afford, you know, whatever it is, $100, $200 or more for an actual person to master it. You know, I think it's a good way to go. You can upload references and it will analyze the reference. And it's kind of the same stuff that you can do with Ozone, but maybe there's even a little bit more, you know, computation happening in the background than even Ozone. So I think we're going to see more of that kind of stuff. I think it's going to be harder for AI to take 70 tracks and make them all sound really musical and great together. So, but it doesn't mean that it can't ever happen. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's the Waves one's interesting because it's been on my list of things to try out, as has, I know Slate Digital have got one as well.
Do they?
Virtue.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking, cause I've got the Slate Digital stuff, and I was looking at it yesterday, and I haven't tried that either to see what that sounds like, but I might go through the process of doing an AB. Maybe I'll release a video on it and then get people's opinions on which one was better. That, actually, thinking off the top of my head, that would probably be quite a good episode.
Yeah, I think if you had a real person master song and then upload the same thing to a few of the online things and do like a blind listening, I mean, it might hurt the mastering engineer if theirs isn't the one that's picked. Yeah. But I think that would be pretty interesting to do something along those lines.
Yeah. Going back to what you said about the AI and Taylor Swift and Drake, I was thinking of, as you were mentioning it then, off the top of my head, it would be interesting where record labels go with it and whether or not they could literally own the sound of someone's voice.
Yeah.
And then if that individual was to no longer be part of that label, but they owned their voice, whether they could just then, because AI is only going to get better.
Yeah.
it's only going to improve with machine learning and big data and stuff. And whether or not they'll then just be able to say, well, okay, well, you can leave the label, but we're going to use your voice and we're going to continue release. But then again, I'm totally spitballing now, but they could, then they would need the name and et cetera. Yeah. It'd be very interesting to see where it goes. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. You could go, I mean, that's a whole like podcast series in itself with AI.
It is. Yeah.
And the creative industry, definitely. Yeah. Interesting stuff. We're coming towards the end now, Brent, but I've got one last question. I think this is quite an interesting one. Have you encountered any sort of myths or misconceptions around sort of organization and productivity in your workflow in mixing, let's say?
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind. One is, that you need a lot of gear to make great records. I always try to encourage new producers and engineers, you know, you don't really need all that much, and it's cheaper than it's ever been to actually do really, really great work. You don't need to go out and get all of the, 1176s and the LA-2As and then, the U-47. I mean, there's a ton of gear and it's easy to get distracted by that. And if you don't love what you're doing, say, oh, it's just because I don't have this piece of outboard gear. That's not the way you need to think. You know, you have the tools that you need to make great music. And so I think for aspiring mixers, I say you could almost do great work with just the stock plugins in your DAW. The things that you need to be focusing on more are your monitoring. That is a place that I feel like you can do some, investing, as well as the acoustics of your room. I mean, focus more on those two things and don't get all plug-in crazy or, hardware crazy. And just kind of like really focus more on like learning how compression works and what different ones sound like and doing ABs and just do a lot of critical listening. And that's going to go a lot further than just buying one thing and realizing that doesn't fix a problem and buying something else and trying to fix this problem that doesn't even exist. So that's one thing. Another maybe is just that the longer you mix something, the better the mix is going to be. That's not always the case either. There's this thing, the point of diminishing return, and you got to know, like, and this is just something that takes some experience, knowing when something is ready to be sent off for the artist and the producer to review that. So I tell most people, I think the sweet spot is like 8 to 12 hours, and if you're like messing with something for 3 days straight, you may have gone a little too far and started sucking the life out of all the content that you've been given. So, just kind of be aware of that, and know that the longer you spend doesn't mean the better it's going to get. And I encourage most people to, this is just a formula that works well, I think, just to, if you're going to start a mix, start it that morning, tell the producer or the artist, whoever the client is, that, the following day at noon, you're going to deliver mix one, and then that sets a deadline for you. And that they're going to be expecting that. And so work on it that entire day, get it to where you feel like it's at least 80 or 90% done. And then the next morning you can kind of on fresh ears, finalize some things, print that mix one, deliver it by lunchtime to that client. And that does a couple things. That ensures that you don't live with it too long and that you don't just destroy it. I know that that's easier said than done for maybe someone getting started who isn't maybe for sure if it's quite ready to send out. But I think that's a good goal to work towards. And that formula works really well for me. So those are a couple myths, I think, that come to mind.
And they're great ones as well, because they've been mentioned on the podcast before, which is fantastic, because it kind of like compounds the message that we've put out previously, which is great, which is about the plugin and the idea of a silver bullet that's going to sort of fix your mixing. Mm-hmm. And I've said it before, and I think I did an episode with another producer, and I said about monitoring, and you need to, as best you can, because I appreciate not everyone's got the perfect environment, but if you're monitoring in a poor environment, then it's a filter, isn't it? It's going to act as a filter on whatever you're hearing, mm-hmm. and it's going to impact on that. And also learning the fundamentals and what, like you said there about plugins, and not just thinking, I need to own all these plugins to make my mixing better. It's like stock plugins are incredible these days. Really, really good. I use Logic primarily and Reaper as well, but I know many people that use Cubase, and the stock stuff is fantastic. So audience, don't feel like you need to go out and buy the next best thing. I know we're being advertised, all this stuff like all the time. I routinely see it, but that's retargeting advertising, isn't it? And time equals success is another big one as well. I've mentioned that before on the podcast. So it's great to hear that also, in that just because you spend a lot of time on something doesn't mean that it's going to reap the rewards that it should, you know, diminishing returns and everything. So fantastic stuff, Brent. Excellent stuff. Love it. Thank you for spending the time with me today. I appreciate it. We're approaching the end of the episode now. Where can our audience sort of find you online? Where's the best place for them to go if they want to learn more about what you do or even work?
Yeah, there's two spots. I spend the most time on Instagram at Brent Hendrich, B-R-E-N-T-H-E-N-D-R-I-C-H. And I post about 3 times a week there. Quite a bit of reels, some mixed tips and things like that. So if you want to kind of keep up with me on a weekly basis, that's the best place. DM me, say, hey, we'll start talking about whatever you want. And then I also, my website, brenthendrich.com. I try to update that on a regular basis. That's a good place to go more for hearing, you know, other episodes or other podcasts I've been on, articles, listening to a lot of my work. That's kind of where you want to go for any of those kinds of things. And there's a great form on there that you can just, you know, put in your info. And that's a great way to get a hold of me as well. So yeah, that's probably the two best places to find me.
Fantastic stuff. Audience, those links will be in the episode description. So do go and follow Brent on Instagram and also check out the website as well. It's been a pleasure, Brent. You've got the rest of your day to enjoy now.
I do.
getting up nice and early. It's been great talking to you.
Great talking to you, Mark.
Whoa. Before you go, make sure to snag your free test master from Synth Music Mastering. Imagine enhancing your music with my steadfast dedication to quality and that personalized touch. And here's the kicker. It's absolutely free. No cost at all. Simply head over to synthmusicmastering.com or click the link in the episode description to claim your free test master.